Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Let's see what else is on michaelsavage.com. I haven't really looked at the website today. I've been busy eating Indian food for lunch and went to a buffet over 8. I always say to myself, don't go to the buffets. You know what's going to happen. You're going to eat that second, third plate. I ate the fourth plate. You know what's going to happen. You're making believe you're going there for the rice and the vegetarian, then you're going to eat the lamb, and I did 3 times. Because you say to yourself, well, the lamb is dead anyway. It doesn't matter. The poor thing's dead. And you do a Hail Mary over the lamb 3 or 4 times. It's unbelievable. This is how you cheat on your diet. As you go to buffets, and you go back 3 or 4 times. That's what matters to me at this phase of my life is – my mother used to say it was Italian or Chinese at the end of her years. Now, I'm not anywhere near the end of my years. It is true. I'm putting together the Savage Library. I have someone archiving every radio tape I've ever saved going back to 1994. What a job. You'd think I was crazy. I have radio tapes going back to when I was a local host because I knew that there was gold in them Nor Hills and then Knob Tapes. And manuscripts. After all, I've only written 25 books, most of them in longhand. And the manuscripts must be worth something. I realize that I'm not as famous as a man who drowned a girl in a car, but there might be a buyer out there for such an estate. You never know. Might be worth a few pennies now and again. All of the handwritten manuscripts, the notes, the letters, the audio tapes going back to 1994, things of that nature. So in my own non-Ubermensch way, I'm trying to put these things together. And I mean, that's what I've been doing sort of on the side here. Incidentally, you can see what I've written in part by going to michaelsavage.com. I'm about to go to press. I would say we're going to send it to the printer next week. So if you want a copy, you really should order it. I mean, the big sales are going to come after Labor Day. And by that point, I think the first printing is going to be set. I would say get your name on the list for the first printing, first edition. It's the same exact situation as remember Psychological Nudity was the same thing last year? I kept saying first edition, first printing. It's going to go, and then it did. Then it was the first edition, second printing. You know, okay, whatever. Say, well, what is it worth? 10 cents more? I don't know what it's worth. I was going through my archives today because the archivist needs all the tapes, and I uncovered mountains of tapes from 1994, 95, 96 when I was a local host. But leave it there on tape. These are on actual audio tapes. I used to drive them crazy at the station and make the poor engineers record these shows. And I would put little wrappers around them with handwritten notes. Like today I talked about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. That was in 94. I was still things of that nature. Immigration out of control, 94, 95. All these notes are on. And I discovered old coins. Would you believe it? I found boxes and boxes of Morgan silver dollars, Indian head cents. Then I stumbled upon some things owned by my children in storage. God! Like junior high school report cards and journals that I had them keep when we take them on ocean trips when they were in school. I remember we used to take them on trips and take them out of school because there was a credo that your child will learn more on a cruise on an ocean liner in traveling and experiences than he will in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade. Well, that was a liberal credo. They wouldn't say that anymore because liberals don't travel with their children. They're too busy traveling with themselves so they can switch hit with each other while they're on the road, and the children are left at home with a house sitter with Ritalin. But we actually traveled with our children on ocean liners, and I found the journals, they're very touching. Usually the child, it's very much out of Mark Twain. It's very cute. The journals, I say, okay, look, son, here's what we're going to do. We're going on a trip for 4 weeks in December. You're going to be out of school. I'm going to miss 2 weeks, 3 weeks of school. But I'll tell you what, you're going to keep a journal of every port we go to. That's when I was collecting plants in the South Pacific. Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Palmyras, I mean, amazing places. And I said, and if you meet interesting people on the ship, you're going to make notes of it. And birds, You're going to make notes of birds that you see and things that, sure, Dad, great, love it. And the first day, they sit at the table, you know, the card table, while the people are somewhere else up in the dining room, and they write. You look at the journal 20 years later. It's only two pages are dutifully entered, and then the rest are blank because kids are kids. They were busy living and enjoying themselves instead of writing down a stupid journal that nobody would ever read. They actually were looking at the birds. They actually were running on the decks of the ship. God bless them. I'm glad they didn't keep a journal. But those first two pages were really well. Good penmanship was great. No, those are the days. You know that my bar bills, I still have some of the bar bills from those ships. My bar bills for wine and drinks were higher than my rent was. They used to charge you. There's nothing else to do on a ship other than drink. That's the big secret of why people go on. Well, you see, in those days, ships were a little different than they are today. Today, they're floating Las Vegas hotels. What they are is like a Motel 6 with propellers today. You can't even walk on a ship and enjoy the air without some kind of Muzak driving you indoors so that you gamble or buy some garbage that you could buy in Target for less money, for example. But in the days that I began traveling on ships, I traveled on some of the last great ships, the Oriana. In fact, I just found some artifacts from the Canberra, the Oriana. These were amazing ocean liners that were used for actual transport as opposed to being simply a floating brothel. Pardon me for leaving the news for a moment, but this is a talk show, and since it's a talk show, we talk about things other than the news, even though the news is very important, and things of that nature. But we talk about other things, particularly if you're a great conversationalist as I am, and being a Renaissance man as I am, I can talk about most everything with some degree of knowledge. Is there anyone listening to this show who is not an executor, but an appraiser of literary estates? Let me put it to you that way. I've written 25 books, right? So I have manuscripts, cartons, mementos. Then I have 15 years of tapes, radio tapes. They have to be worth a fortune because once I get this all put together and insured, I'm probably going to either sell it off or build a library and then donate all the money to charity. I have some idea of what this is worth, and I'm not going to throw the number out, but I want a genuine appraiser to call the show. I don't know how they do these things. I mean, they say that, let's say, Jack Kerouac's estate is worth $20 to $25 million. Now, he was a really great writer, and it contained his first manuscript for On the Road with a teletype roll and all of that, and then the family's fighting over the estate and blah, blah, blah. How do you determine what something is worth? I have millions of listeners, and I have several million readers of my books, so therefore, there's a value. It's a matter of what the value is. And I don't know how you come to these terms. Or I'll just build a library. I have an idea for that. And the centerpiece will be the 1965 Cadillac, which right now has its fuel tank removed because apparently something broke in it. And the center thing will be the 65 Caddy with American flags on it when the chrome was thick and the women were straight.
Savage.
So here we are. What would you like to talk about? Play the Philip Morris thing for me. I'm not in the mood to do politics right now. I think I'll do nostalgia. I think I figured out why I've been banned in Britain. It may not actually be statements that they said I made, which I didn't make. It could be because I wrote psychological nudity. And in psychological nudity, there are stories that could be offensive to the Obermensch of Britain, the liberals of Britain. For example, there is the story of the tough high school geometry teacher with two fingers on his right hand, who was a tough guy, and he was an Irishman. And there may be a reason that the British banned me that is related to this story, for all I know. And then, of course, I wrote about happy and sad cufflinks that I had as a child. And that could be offensive to a liberal government when you think about it, because if you put children on Prozac, they're neither happy nor sad. They're flatlined all the time, so they can be easily manipulated by Gordon Brown. And so, therefore, if I write a story called Happy and Sad Cufflinks, and I remind people that we actually have emotions once we throw our drugs away, that's a threat to a liberal nation, and that could be a reason I was banned in Britain. And so I'm looking through the stories now, and I think I'm going to next purge some of these stories in an attempt to be taken off the list, banned in Britain. Here's another one. My dog Tippy died and was thrown into a garbage truck on page 21. Now, that's offensive to a liberal. And I think that that may be the reason I'm banned in Britain. What if I read that in England? What if I'd gone on a book tour in England and I read Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck? That could be a shock to the British today. Dead man's pants. There you go again. Making a mockery of using clothing from dead people. And somehow that's offensive to the dead. So that has to go out of the story. Here's another one. Nutty friend had crazy mother. You can't call anyone's mother crazy, even though she beat herself on the hands and wrists with a chain and then told her his father that he did it in order to make the father fight the son. That could be offensive to a liberal government. Now, there's one-armed Frank. Now, look at that story on page 43 of Psychological Nudity. That could be the reason I was banned in Britain by the liberal government. Look at that story, one-armed Frank. You can't say a thing like that in England today. It may offend people with one arm. You have to pretend that there are no people with one arms, particularly those who came back from Afghanistan and Iraq, who lost their arms for no reason whatsoever. Then this one must have been. This could be the one. Half man, half woman in Long Beach. That unto itself could be the reason that I was banned in Britain. And you never know. And then there's, of course, well, there are other stories in there that you may not want to read anymore. Because, well, there's another one. The Islamists are winning. There you go. There's a reason for banning me from England. Islamists are winning. Here's another one. Plastic bags are banned in San Francisco, but not condoms. Now, that's a threat to the social order in a liberal government. That's another reason to ban the book. So I would suggest that you, if you have a copy of this, you, I don't know, maybe you should bury it in your backyard with your guns. Because once they come for the Second Amendment, once they win on that, they'll come for the First Amendment. Now, it is true they've already come for the First Amendment through their friends in England. So what would you like me to talk about? I'm just having fun today. That's all. It's summertime. I've got the summertime giddiness. Most normal people are not even listening to the radio today. If you're listening, it means you're not normal. It really means that. If you're actually listening to this show, it means you probably have troubles in your life. Because actually, you should be somewhere. But since you're not a normal person, you're listening to talk radio, we can just talk amongst ourselves because we are not the ubermensch of the kind of this Brinkley character talks about with Ted Kennedy or Howard Dean. He's certainly an ubermensch. He would be. Wouldn't Howard Dean be an ubermensch? Or Chuck Schumer's an ubermensch. He's got big feet. Is shoe size got something to do with ubermenschen? What actually makes somebody an ubermensch? This historian referred to Ted Kennedy as a form of ubermensch when talking about him as a person. Would Chuck Schumer qualify as an ubermensch because of his shoe size? Would Howard Dean qualify as an ubermensch because of his... Well, let's leave it go at that. It is a family show. And now we have Arianna Huffington, another wonderful prize lover of the poor, even though she herself married a rich man in order to take his name and his money. Arianna Huffington talks about the death of Ted Kennedy and how it's a moral imperative to pass the health care reform for him. Now, why would Arianna Huffington, a woman who married for money and took the man's name, be caring so much about health care reform? Can anybody figure that out? Let's hear clip 7.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch, the JFK torch, the Kennedy torch.
Wait a minute, did she say he passed the torch? But I thought this woman was a prize debater. Did she say that Ted Kennedy passed the torch? Can anyone call the show and tell me what a torch is? What in the world is a torch? Beowulf, do you know what a torch is? Play that again. I want to hear what a torch is.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch, the JFK
torch. All right, yeah, she passed the
torch.
She passed the torch. All right, take a walk. Take a walk. You pretended you were a Republican before you got married, and then yeah, after the money came flowing in, you got the name and the gelt, and then moved on, the gelt and the pelt, boom. Does anybody know what a torch is? Because she's a member of the Obermensch class, and if she says torch, maybe it's a code word for the Dorchester Hotel and some code words about England. I don't get it. Did she say that he passed the torch? Let me hear that one more time.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch.
The torch. Senator. Why do they all care? The rich people care about the poor so much, and the rest of us who have to pay for it don't. Isn't that intriguing that the very rich are very interested in the very poor, while the middle class is not so interested in making sure that the very poor take any more of their tax money? I guess that's how it works. But then again, you have to be an Obermensch to understand how the rich think, because they think differently than you and I, in that they use your money to advance their social causes. And there's a reason for it. That's how they wind up as Obermensch. That's the way it is. But you see, God sees the truth but waits. In the end, he gets them all. He gets us too. But we hope that the Obermensch get a little worse treatment than we do at the end. Of course, there's no such guarantee. I've seen the good die young, and I've seen the good die horribly, and I've seen the bad live long and the bad live well. So having said all of that, let's move on to talk radio. Wouldn't it be nice if there really was justice on Earth? Wouldn't it be nice if everything you learned when you were a kid that bad deeds are punished and good deeds are rewarded? Wouldn't life be wonderful if you could believe in Santa Claus? All that stuff that you learned in the pew, wouldn't that be great if you could actually believe it? That in this life, the bad get punished and you get rewarded? I don't know, but when I see a five-year-old kid dying of leukemia without hair, screaming for his mother, I don't know, there's something wrong with that picture. When you go into a ward of children with cancer, there's something wrong with that picture. They can't all have done something so bad to have gotten cancer at such early ages, could they? Then, of course, the libs believe in karma, and they would say that they did something bad in a past life, and then they go on with their Prozacian ways. But for those of us who don't think that way, it's kind of painful. How come you don't hear that childhood cancer is an epidemic? How come you never see pictures of children with cancer in the media? Why is there no sympathy for American children dying of cancer in the back wards? Why do you never see those pictures? Why is there only sympathy for, let us say, illegal aliens? Or, others, certainly not children. Why are children the most ignored component of American life today? Why don't politicians ever talk about family life or family values? Why is marriage never rewarded in America? Why is married life never supported by our political class? Why is the swinging lifestyle sort of winked at by the political class while the married life is sort of rejected by them? Even though they're basically all old white men and they're almost all married, why do you never hear about their wives and children? How come that's sort of gone by the way of the Dorch? Have we passed the Dorch to that extent? See, I'm having a good time today, as you can well see. I mean, I can tell you to go by Michael Savage, Banded Britain, but I'm not going to tell you to do that because either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. Now, if you do it, it won't change my lifestyle. And if you don't do it, it won't change my lifestyle. So, therefore, I'm free at last. And since I'm free at last, I can talk about anything else, including passing the Dorch. I can't get over that. Pass the Dorch.
Senator Kennedy, pass the torch.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Normally, I don't usually take a long vacation in there. I take a week. But you know, this year I am so burned out. I'm so tired from it all. I'm thinking of just this. I don't know where to go, though. I maybe Fiji again. Tavayuni, I'm thinking of going back because I was there from 69 off and on for many, many years collecting plants long before Fiji became a real tourist destination. I was there when it was still a colony. God, I'm getting old. I can't believe I got off the ship, the Oriana, in June of 1969, I think, or July, September of 1969, and Fiji was still a colony. I can't believe it. It was the last year of being a British colony. What year is this? It's like, what is going on, Ichabod Crane? My God, that's like a lifetime, you know? By cracky, I'm like Methuselah here on the radio. I don't know if I want to go back because I think that there won't even be a country I'll recognize at all down there. And it's, you know, it's a big tourist destination now. It's like a Hawaii, like a would-be Hawaii. They take brave, bold, muscular men who should be hunting and have them serve drinks to weaklings from America and Australia. There's something that nauseates me about that, to see muscular Fijian men with a flower in their hair serving a drink to a weakling from Australia or America, sitting with a pasty body by the pool. Something about it in me rebels against it. I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm a Westerner. I understand. I'm not a big muscular guy. But I don't know. There's something in me. There's still a part of me that doesn't like it. When they say, you know, Nisan Bula, and the guy crouches down to give some warthog a Mai Tai. There's something wrong with that picture. It's like white mischief to me. Oh, boy, oh, boy. That's the problem with having a kaleidoscopic mind. That's the problem. It's also the problem with being a logical mind. See, the problem with Western civilization is this, is that when you have reason, there's always a counterpoint to your reason. So people who don't have reason will always win. And that's why we're losing, because the radical Islamists don't have reason. They say, this is the way. Anyone who disagrees with it is an infidel. You're going to die. We say, won't you reason with us? They don't even know what you're talking about, because there's no reason in their thought structure. And that's why we're going to lose unless we become more unreasonable than them. Iran is the nest, is the spider's nest behind it all. Everybody knows that. But it won't happen. I'm only a talk show host, so it doesn't matter anyway. So that's why I say it's time to go away. Some days I get up. You know what I want to do? I want to leave radio, disappear, change my name, move to an island somewhere and never be heard from again. Turn off the radio, turn off the television, and never, ever look at the news and say, well, you know, when I'm an old man, if someone comes here with a headscarf and a scimitar, I'll know that we lost. And when I'm a very old man, if someone doesn't come here with a headscarf and a scimitar, I'll know that we won. Until that time, leave me alone. I'd rather drink Yangona, you know, and beer, and that's the end of the story. Go out like Robinson Crusoe. Not worry about going to a dermatologist every time I get a scab on my head. I never heard of anything like the society I live in. Oh, look at that. I was in the sun. I got a scab. They cut you open on the head because you got a little scab. Everything you're supposed to go to the doctor for. There's a lot to be said for just getting old and dying, you know, also. I could see why a lot of the old-timers went out that way. They did. They didn't like the whole scene. You're going to get butchered in the end. All they do is cut you up and leave you like a hamburger and take out a couple of hundred grand from your family, from the 20% that your insurance doesn't cover. I went to the doctor the other day. He says to me, what kind of country do we live in that Russians come here? They have to only wait 5 years. He said they get gold-plated medical treatment, unlike anything Uncle Joe Stalin promised them in Russia. He said, while union workers in this country, average workers in this country, can't get their teeth fixed, can't get a prescription drug filled. He said, what kind of country do we live in? I won't tell you the doctor's name, but he's an American. I said, welcome to America where the streets are paved with yolds. KNEW, San Francisco, Anthony. Next topic, please.
Cook Islands. That's where you want to go.
I was in the Cook Islands. I was in Palmyra. I was in the Cook Islands. So how long has it been since you've been there?
I go there. I try to go there every year.
Where do you go? What part of the Cooks do you go to?
I go to Aitutaki. Atiu is where my wife's from. There's only about 400 people on that island. And Tonga.
Have you ever been to Palmyra?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Well, look, they're pretty remote, those islands. People don't even know what remote is until they've set foot in one of those atolls where there's an entire community of individuals who have been living there since God created the earth. It's hard to imagine what it's like. Even though they're westernized to a certain extent, you can still get the vibe off the ancient, can't you?
Yeah. Oh, the caves there in Atiu, it's incredible there. I would strongly suggest revisiting that place again because it hasn't changed much.
Yeah, well, you know, in Rarotonga, when I first went there, what's the dance that they do where the women shake their bodies and they go, called?
Asian. My wife's an actual dancer, too.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? An amazing culture. So where did you meet your wife?
I met her here in Marin County, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, that's funny. What, she came as a dancer and you stole her heart?
No, it's a longer story than that. I'm sure you don't have time for it all, but we hooked up in a great way, and I just couldn't let her go.
Isn't that beautiful? That's a beautiful story. So do you have children yet?
Yeah, I have one named Rakanui and another one Giovanni. I just had another second son.
And where are you raising the children, Anthony?
I'm doing my best to raise them in Marin County. I've been here my whole life. I went through all the Democratic stuff. My father's very politically active here. He was a Marin County supervisor for 25 years and made a lot of big changes for the right reasons here. But I'll tell you, man, it's hard to survive over here with all these bumper stickers.
It's frightening. No, the county has been completely mentally polluted by Barbara Boxer. She has warped the mind of Marin County. This used to be a Republican-conservative stronghold, this county across the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. But since she came out, she spread the virus of liberalism, and it's now metastasized.
You know, there was a time where...
Well, wait, hold on a minute. But raising the children, this is a very important question, Anthony. Let me go into it with you because it applies to all people who love America, across America, young people who are having children who are bewildered. You can raise a child the right way, even in a liberal community, and you don't have to become fanatically religious to do so either. There is a way to do it. You know, you can survive. you can swim with these comedians and still turn out a child of substance.
Yeah, and I have, and I plan on raising them the right way.
Well, look, let me explain two things from my point of view, and I'm certainly you're a strong man, obviously, who's going to do it your way. If you teach your children the culture of your own culture, it's probably a European-American heritage, I would assume, and then the culture of your wife of Asian, I'm sorry, of Pacific Islander, and you teach them the essence of what that means, borders, language, and culture, and how those people survive for thousands of years on their own, with their own language, with their own culture, with their own borders, meaning the borders of their island, and how that applies to America, your child will find his way or her way in this country at the end of the day.
One of the reasons that we make sure we all go back there, so they're linked to that culture as well. I think it's important.
Well, you're a lucky man. Obviously, you have a strength of mind, and that's why your children will turn out fine. Now, you're going to send them where, to Redwood High School?
Well, I went to Drake, so, you know, they'll probably end up at Drake.
Guess what? You can send your child to a very liberal school where drugs are rampant, and they could come out without having used drugs and still have a spine. It can be done. You mustn't let the liberal virus drive the good people out. You mustn't. You must try to save your own child, and by doing so, you may save the school and the county. Thanks for the call. I don't think I'm going to go to the Cook Islands. Do we have any Cook Island music? That is such great music. When I first heard it in 1970 in the islands, it was like with the drums. They use sticks on wood. God, I'd love to dig some of that music up. I have some old tapes that are so great. I got to dig them out of the archives. Anybody have Cook Island music they could play in the background, or Tahitian, the old Tahitian music? What am I talking about? You don't even know what I'm talking about. Hey, I don't have to do politics. I could just do radio. I can tell you a story. You want me to tell stories about the South Pacific, plant collecting circa 1969 through X? Why, I can remember. I've been through hurricanes, tornadoes, and typhoons. I was on a ship between Tahiti and Fiji in a Force 10 storm. We thought that steel ship would go down, but by cracky, she didn't. It's 100% true. Did I tell you about the German captain on that ship? I was simply a lecturer. For a long while, you see, I got free passage on cruise ships as a lecturer because I had been an anthropologist. I had some good slides. Color slides, lantern slides. Sounds like Charles Darwin. No one uses them anymore. I mean, taken with the old Nikon F with an actual light meter. Some of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen I took. I mean, of the islands, because I really knew lighting and I had a great camera, the old Nikon F with the light meter. And so anyway, the long and short of it is, so I talked my way into various cruise lines, and they would offer us a free first-class passage, and then I'd get a cabin for the children. Now, they were very young, and I'd have to take them out of school, but I believed that the children would learn more in a month away at sea and visiting the islands and seeing, you know, people of means that they'd meet on the ships when ship travel still had a little dignity than they would sitting in a school on a wooden chair listening to a stuffy lecture about the wonders of hedonism.
Savage.
To tell you the Force 10 storm. That's right. Let me tell you, it's a true story, because this was one of the most frightening moments of my life, because my family was on the ship. So as I was saying, when I was a younger guy, because I had been in the islands as an anthropologist, ethnobotanist, and I had great slides taken with my Nikon F with the light meter days. I mean, those were the days of real photography. I'm not saying you can't do it with digital. You can, because I have a digital camera, which I'm very fond of. I really don't know how to compare the two, because I'm very happy with the digital pictures in some way. But the day of holding the light meter and stepping back, and that was another story with the clicking the lenses on the Nikon F, which you got out of Hong Kong at a discount through a friend. I mean, they were exciting days of taking pictures, and you took slides in those days. Slides, like a hello, lantern slides, as I said, Charles Darwin. You know, does anyone do slides anymore? I don't think so. I don't think anyone does a slide. But the quality of the depth of the picture was phenomenal. I have some pictures, for example, of kids, and these were mixed-race kids, incidentally, in the Cook Islands in the circa 1970 or 71, laughing on a roadside as I went by and started to talk to them. right after a light rainstorm. So anyway, because I had great slides, I went to the cruise lines because I was always in love with big ships. I remember when I was a kid in New York, because I was landlocked and grew up in a family that didn't know from boating, from a locks. I used to drive on the West Side Highway when I first got my car in New York, if you know what the West Side Highway is, and the great cruise ships of the world would line up on the Hudson River piers, and I would drive by. They were the most beautiful visions I'd ever seen. Each ship was filled with the promise of a thousand lifetimes to me. I don't know what drew me to the sea in that way, but I had said to myself that when I got older, whatever I did, I had to go to sea in some way or another. Now, I didn't go in the Navy. Fate did not take me in the Navy. Perhaps that would have been another life and a great life unto itself. But as I say, so I went to the islands, I took these great pictures, and then as I had children and I still wanted to get out there and didn't have the money to do so, I marketed myself in the proper manner, went to the cruise lines, and I said, well, I could lecture your passengers on the islands and this and that, which was true, and have great pictures and showed it to, boom, boom, boom. So I got the first class cabin for the two of us and one for the kids. So I took the kids out of school very often during vacations, and it was a question, should you take your kids out of school for a month at a time, and they'd fall behind in lessons. And I remember, I hope my son's not listening, and I would say, now look, son, I'm taking you out of school for a month. This is a great privilege to go on a ship. You're going to have to take your lessons with you. We're going to do the lessons on the ship, and you're going to keep a journal. Sure, Dad. Now, remember, because you have an opportunity to learn from far. Yeah, Dad, sure. Well, needless to say, 3 days out, the journal was still blank. The pages were blank, and the school books were still sitting on the shelf, and the kids were wheeling around the deck of the ship, bothering all of the old people who hated children. They were the only children on the ship in some cases, because who else had a child on a ship in those days in the month of, let's say, October or November? Nobody. And so, therefore, we would be at sea. Now, where was I? Okay, so one of the ships that we got on was not a big ocean liner, a 35,000-ton, let's say, Royal Viking ship. They were magnificent. I remember once I got on a ship called, oh, I don't know what it was called, my God, but it was a small ship with a very small draft that could get into shallow waters like in the Antarctic because it was made for Antarctic cruising. Okay, so shallow bottom ship between Tahiti and Fiji, two cabins. It didn't have many passengers. It was a 5,000-ton ship. That's pretty small when the average cruise ship then was, a big ship was 35,000 tons. Today they're 100,000 tons, 100 and a quarter. They're monsters. They're hotels with propellers. For better or for worse, I don't particularly like that size ship for myself. If you do, God bless you. So I'm on a 5,000-ton boat, shallow keel, very shallow keel, and we leave Fiji and we're supposed to be out there back and forth for about 20 days. You know, Fiji, island hopping to Tahiti, around a Christmas time, New Year's time. Well, we get into a hurricane. Now, you got a shallow bottom ship, 5,000 tons, and this ship is rolling. In the middle of the night, I hear a pounding. They put me as a lecturer in the front of the ship in the forward bow cabin, not exactly the best steel hull, and I'm hearing banging like someone's hitting the hull with a sledgehammer. So I wake up and I said, something is wrong. Why is this ship sounding like this? I get up, I go in the passageways, nobody is awake. But being a survival type, I knew something was wrong. I throw on a windbreak, I climb up to the bridge, and there is the German captain, who is normally as nattily dressed as you would expect of a sea captain. He is unshaven, he is in an undershirt, and his eyes are in a state of absolute, I don't know how to put it, they weren't in a state of panic, but they were locked. They were locked onto another place at another time. And he looks at me as though I'm not there. He looks right through me. His hands are locked on the wheel. And he's looking. I can't explain it. It wasn't a state of panic. I don't know how to describe. I almost don't have the words for it. And I'm pretty good with words. But his eyes were looking somewhere away. Maybe you say like a soldier. Would they say they have the 1,000-yard look? That's what he had. And he had gone a little nuts from the pressure. And he said to me, lecturer, he wasn't even calling me by the name anymore. Lecturer, all the time, Fiji, Tahiti, Tahiti, Fiji. Lecturer, Fiji, Tahiti, Tahiti, Fiji, lecturer. You know, it's like he had gone nuts already. Anyway, the long and short of it was we went into a terrible, terrible gale. I don't know what they call it, a storm down there. It's not called a typhoon in that area, not a monsoon. Whatever it was very rough and very bad. And I feared the ship would go down. And I became kind of disenamored of taking my children on long trips on small ships after that, to be honest with you. So be that as it may, here I am in front of a microphone, nice and safe, landlocked, sitting in a dry place, watching the world go round. Now, where was I? Oh, so I was going to ask you, if you came from a family that took you away on long trips, did it affect you positively in the long run or negatively? Now, this is interesting because here's the interesting twist to this whole thing. It was actually a liberal thought in those days that if you took your child out of school for a long trip and they were exposed to the world, they would get more out of that long exposure than they would from sitting in a classroom. That was actually a liberal philosophy, which I went along with and ascribed to, and it turned out to be correct. So Brad in Melbourne, Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great show.
Thank you. So were you a kid taken out of school?
I was. I grew up in rural South Carolina, probably went to one of the worst school districts in the South. And my parents fought with the school board, but took my sister and myself out of school every year from Thanksgiving through the second week in January and took us to a different country around the world for those 6 weeks.
Well, you're a lucky kid. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. That's the one, Blue Monday. Always a Blue Monday at the Savage Nation.
Got to work.
It will always be Blue Monday for me. And a Blue Tuesday, and a Blue Wednesday, and a Blue Thursday, and a Blue Friday, and a Blue Saturday, and a Blue Sunday. Life is blue. What's wrong with that? Stop for a minute. What is wrong with that? Why must you be happy? Happiness is an illusion. And seeking happiness is the greatest con ever created. You know, you got to hand it to the founding fathers. You're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, you can all understand why you're entitled to life. You don't live in the Soviet system. You're entitled to liberty because you don't live in Britain. So you're entitled to life, liberty, and you're entitled to the pursuit of happiness. But the founding fathers were so smart that they didn't promise you happiness. Only Obama promises you happiness. The founding fathers promised you the pursuit of happiness, the right to pursue it, not the right to have it. The Marxists lie to you and tell you that they're going to give it to you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
A new article came out from the government media complex, posted by the Associated Press. But as you well know, nothing gets posted by the Associated Press that doesn't first go through Rahm Emanuel's hands. And, of course, the guy with the skinny mustache who looks like he ran the UJA in New York, whoever he is. What's his name? Why do I always forget him? Those two sneaks from Chicago. Yeah, Axelrod, with the pencil mustache. And, of course, they're trying to tell you that children aren't worth it. Middle-income family spends $221,000 to raise a baby. It says there's no secret raising children, but how about nearly $250,000? Is that expensive? Now, I think it's low by 50%, by the way. A government report, meaning an Obama report, released today, says a middle-income family with a child born last year will spend $221,000 raising their child through age 17. That's off by at least $250,000. Now, it leads you to ask, is a child worth it? Because as you well know, the illegal aliens are the only ones who the Obamas want to have children. And the reason the Obamaites want more and more illegal aliens to bring more and more babies here and make them into instant citizens is that they're more malleable than an American-born child. Because if a child doesn't speak the language, they will do exactly what you want them to do. They're glad to collect a government check. They're glad to go to a government school. They'd be glad to go to a government health care center, just as they did in their native Nicaragua, El Salvador, or Mexico. You understand why the Obamaites want more and more illegal aliens from these countries? And so it brings up a question that is worth asking anyway. Are children worth it? Now, let's think back to when people had large families. I'm not talking about illegal aliens who have as many children as they can because every one of them becomes an instant citizen owing to the stupidity of the American people who permit this nonsense to go on. I am talking about normal, healthy, sane married families of any race in this country and why they have children. What's the reason for having children? In the original times, the old times rather, when people were agricultural, the children worked on the farm. That's, by the way, why they were given long school vacations, in case you don't know it. Children were given summer vacations because it was too hot to go to school, and the children were needed around the farm. Consequently, the children worked during the summers. They didn't stay home and smoke marijuana, whatever the children are doing today. So now you have families with idlers sitting around who have nothing to do, and you have this strange situation where parents have to entertain children. Their lives aren't busy enough. But in other words, when a family had 6 to 8 children, hundreds of years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the children were useful to the parents. They were put to work. The girls churned butter. The girls knitted flags and clothing. Whatever else the girls did, the boys went out in the fields or they went hunting, and they put meat on the table. But what good are children now? They only cost you money. And so I ask you, are children worth it? And if so, why? Because they're expensive. When you read that most single-parent households in the U.S. make less than $57,000 and are expected to spend about 7% less on child-rearing costs compared to two-parent households, you have to ask yourself what's going on. And as you would understand, costs of raising a child are highest in the urban Northeast, of course. Everything's better in the urban Northeast because that's Kennedy country. And lowest in the urban South and rural areas, fill in the blanks, meaning where dumb Christians live. Of course, the AP didn't write that, but that's the implication. It's where the toothless Christians live, is in the urban South and rural areas. It's easier to raise a child, less money to raise. But in the intelligent areas of Massachusetts, particularly to raise a child, one of the largest changes over time has been the increase in costs related to care for young children. Now, you notice this AP article is emphasizing the cost of care for young children because the AP article came from, it's no longer the Associated Press, it's the Associated Obama Press, the AOP. What they're trying to do is tell you that after we get universal health care, that is a socialized medicine, we're going to need then universal child care provided for by the communist government of Obama. And then they interview a woman, a mother of three, Rabin Andrews of St. Louis, who said the government figures sounded right to her. "Well, that's not half of a joke," the 42-year-old public school teacher. "I still have to put the little buggers through college." Now, of course, I don't know if you know what the word bugger is. It's actually a derogatory phrase. It shows you how demented the society has become that people would refer their children in such a derogatory manner. But we'll put that aside. The question again is, are children worth it? And why are they worth it? Why do you think it is worth sacrificing to spend money on a child when you can spend it, for example, on a vacation at the beach? Think of all the beautiful clothing you could buy for yourself. Think if you could live like they do in West Los Angeles, where everyone is a star behind their car. Everyone drives around making believe that you think that they think that you think that they think, etc., and everyone's a star behind their car. But think of the beautiful car you could buy instead of raising your child. Think of the extraordinary cost of sending a child to college. I remember when I had very little money and I was struggling, I used to see people driving around in Porsches with bibs on them in the 80s. And I said, "God, that's a beautiful car." I had to save money to send my children through college. I did so. I did want the car. I wouldn't lie to you. If I wanted a brown Porsche with a bib. I look back now and think how stupid that was. But the fact of the matter is, you have to sacrifice to raise a child. It's very expensive and very costly. And what is the reason for raising a child?
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation.
From the train.
Middle-income family spends $221,000 to raise baby. I'm asking you, are children worth it? Why or why not? I mean, think of all the trips you can take, all the nice shoes and ties. Think of all the fun you could have going to resorts. Think of all the meals you could have instead of children. I mean, are they worth it? You don't need them to pick the corn crop. What do you need them for? Why do you have children? What's the purpose of it? I mean, I'll give you my personal opinion is yes, it's worth it. That without children, there's no reason to live, to be honest with you. I mean, to me, that's the whole continuum. And I suppose that grandchildren would be wonderful. I don't have grandchildren. I hope I do one day. But the fact of the matter is that's the whole chain. It's an inherent, encoded desire in mankind. I don't care what the race is. I don't care what the culture is. We know that the ethnic culture, so to speak, or let us say other societies outside of America, place a greater emphasis on family than we do. We know that white people are dying around the world because they have given over to the id and the principle of pleasure rather than the principle of sacrifice, and they would rather have fun than have children. We know that. We know that the birth rates in most Western European nations are unsupportable. They're negative ones. And that the immigrants are going to take over Europe within 50 years. There will be probably the Europe will be Muslim, as certainly England. England is not reproducing. They're too busy getting drunk, puking, and having orgasms or looking for one. England is dead. I think the lowest birth rate that I read about recently was in, believe it or not, Serbia. Ireland had a very low birth rate. And the U.S., if you were to extrapolate out Caucasians from other ethnic groups, it would be a negative one birth rate. The white people are not reproducing. They're too busy having a good time. All you got to do is look at the clubs, and you'll understand what happened to America. Take a look. You go into a city like San Francisco, and you take a look at the stores. There are virtually no baby stores. There are pet stores with clothing for pets. Now, I love my dog, but a dog was originally in a household to entertain children. All right, people now, you hear them talking about their dogs or cats the way they talk used to talk about their children. When I grew up, the women in the Bronx would push a stroller, and they would look at each other's baby and coo over each other's baby and inquire about each other's baby and talk about each other's baby and love each other's baby and help each other over their baby. Today, they talk about their dogs and cats. So that's the future of America. The nation's gone to the dogs. But the question is, for those of you who don't see it that way, who have children or having children or going to have children, why are you doing so? What is the reason that you think it's worth having children? Let's start on the West Coast. Go ahead, please. Your thoughts on children. Have you gone from kids to IDs in one generation?
No. Good afternoon, Dr. Savage. And this question, I think, is why your program is the best because of the various topics in which you direct the show. I am single, don't have any children, but I do believe that things are less family-centered in this country, and I think that the reason why people did have children or the benefit of that is because I believe the greatest contribution we can leave to this planet and this world are the ones we leave behind. So the folks and the people who want to have children and raise them morally and ethically.
Yeah, but what happens if you give your child everything and it winds up like Michael Douglas's son allegedly selling crank in a hotel room? And bring shame to the father and the grandfather. What do you do in that case?
Unfortunately, you have to live with it. You've done the best you can as a parent.
Yeah, but you got to understand, children are a crapshoot, my friend. I don't care how good you are as a parent. There's a story that says the police have done a blood test on the woman who was driving the wrong way on a highway, and she was high on vodka and marijuana. 7 miles she drove on a highway back way, wrong way. She killed herself. She killed her children. She killed her sister's three children, her brother's three children. It's unbelievable to me that you don't understand the dangers of marijuana, that you still don't get it. We all know drunk driving is evil and bad and dangerous. We understand that. But what about driving while high? If anybody in Marin County drives after 6 p.m. who's not high on marijuana, they should be given a prize here. And look at this story. Michael Douglas's son busted for meth sale in the middle of his father's hotel room, allegedly. It's frightening. It's unbelievable to me. The grandfather, Kirk Douglas, Michael Douglas, incredible actors. By the way, this kid was a good actor. I saw him in a movie where they did the three men in a movie a couple of years ago. I loved it. The kid could have had a career in movies. Why? Why did this kid have to become a drug addict? What is it in that family that he was trying to be that he couldn't be? He needed money? He couldn't have gone to his father or grandfather for money. So something's wrong here. I don't know. So talk about children. So don't assume you have a child necessarily things are going to be work out fine. Look at the world around you. I'm asking you if it's worth it. Why? I like to watch certain kind of shows on TV. One of them I like to watch is either the lockups where they got the guys in jail. They always scare you with who's in jail and all of that. And there's some of them are truly frightening characters, you know, behind bars. I mean, they are really frightening. They are the ones who should be on the front lines fighting Islamic terrorism in Afghanistan along with our military if they could be controlled. I mean, these are the guys who would run into a minefield and cut their throats for us. These are the guys who in other times would have been fighting for us instead of being locked up behind bars. But let's put that aside for a minute. They interview them, and most of them say, I want to get out for my kid, my child. Now, you don't know whether they're BSing the camera girl or whatever. They all want a child. Or you look at the organized criminals that are caught. They usually have children. They live for their families. Why? The wise guys, why do they all have families? What's inherently in the DNA of a human being to want to have children? What is it? Is it necessarily something that you're going to gain from a child? What does a child give you? Usually it's a one-way street of you giving them. Now, there are rare exceptions, I admit, but they're far and few between. Why do people have children? They're not easy. Yes, when a child is a baby, if they're born healthy and you're lucky enough to have a healthy child, they're amazing to watch a child be born and to raise the child. It brings something out in you that you can't write about, you can't read about. You have to be there and you have to feel it. It changes you. All of your cells change when you have a baby. It changes everything in you. You start looking at the world a different way and in a better way. You take better care of yourself and you become protective towards them and you start to see society in a different way. But, you know, when a child hits those years, I don't know what the years are, 11, puberty they call it, whatever, puberty, schmuberty. In other words, when they start to get desires for the opposite sex, hopefully, unless they live in Marin County, at that point in their life, they don't want to know you too much anymore. And as I say, you know, you continue to treat them like they're children, and they don't want to be treated like babies anymore at that point, nor should they. So you wind up at that point overprotecting the child. They're trying to break away. You're trying to overprotect. And you go on vacations with them. And as I said to you, when they're 11, 12, 13, it's like taking a strange couple on vacation that you pay for and they don't talk to you. You're trying to entertain them, be entertaining, talk at dinner. They're sitting there, mum, not a word. They don't eat the food. They only want the dessert. They can't wait to get away from you. But so you got to put up with that. And then, of course, there's the wonders of college. When they go off to college, the college students today, glorified houses of ill repute, colleges. I love it. Take a look at what's in college today. College, the Ivy League. They produce wonders like Obama. That's the Ivy League today. New York City, WOR. John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'd like to give you a quick sidebar on that drunk who was driving the car. She also killed three men, three innocent victims driving the right way, Mike.
I'm sorry. You're right. She killed them in the oncoming lane. Yes.
Correct. But getting back to the original story, which I'm very glad you did. It's a great story. I'm 51 years old. I make a great salary, and my biggest regret is never having children.
So, in other words, all that sex and no kids, huh?
If you think so.
Well, you know, John, I use that line on some older friends who, you know, always boast about their conquests and have no children. And the one way to get even with them, if you are a man who's raised children, is to say, wow, all that sex and no children, how sad. But why didn't you get married? Because you had too much fun, you had it too easy with women, what?
I put a lot into my career, a lot into what I was doing in life, and the pages on the calendar just flipped by.
So in other words, you were so devoted to your career that you paid not that much attention to finding a woman suitable to be a mother, right?
Correct. I always thought it would just happen one day without a lot of effort, and it requires a lot of effort.
Oh, it's a full-time job. Particularly today, the women are not, you know, what they were 30 years ago. The women have become more like guys thanks to the hags and the women's movement. And that's why the white race is dying. That's why they won't reproduce, because the women want to be men. They want to behave like men. They want to act like men. They've been encouraged to think like men, act like men, be like men. Consequently, they don't want to be women and they don't want to be mothers. So you could thank Bella Abzug and her cabal of witches for this.
Yeah, with the hat. Bella with the hat.
Yeah, remember her, that doll? That prize? Thanks for the call. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Houston, Steve, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. I'm 35 years old, and I have dogs, and I'm not going to have kids. And I'm going to tell you why. I don't want my kids in schools getting indoctrinated with liberalism, Muslim sensitivity, homosexuals getting married, adopting kids. You know, I don't want to put them through that. The economy's bad. Why have another mouth to feed? But my main reason, Michael, my main reason, I am very outspoken, just like you, about Obama and illegals and socialism.
Yep.
These people may come after me one day because I'm vocal. I don't want my kids being targets. So if they're going to come after me.
Wow. No, that's a very – hey, trust me, your thoughts are all rational. But let me say this, Steve. It's exactly men like you who need to have children. You're the exact kind of father that we need in this country. And let me explain something to you. Tell me when in history it has been easy to have children. Tell me when in history your ancestors found it smooth sailing ahead, and they went ahead because it was so easy for them to have children. Where did your people emigrate from? What country?
I don't know too much about that. I think I have Irish, Swedish, a little German.
All right, whatever they were. So you're European, you're of European descent? All right, so what? At what age, what period of historical time was it ever easy to have a child? During the Middle Ages? During the plague? How come people still had children? In other words, there's some deeper instinct for having children than worrying about the society at large. You cannot let the communists scare you off from the gene pool. Let them scare themselves off from the gene pool. Dave, I suggest that you actually look for a woman, a good woman, and you link up with her, and you're going to become 10 times stronger than you are alone. That would be my advice to you. All right, middle-income family spends $221,000 to raise a baby. That's low. That's much more than that. Much higher than that, but it's expensive. And the question is, are children worth it, and why do you have children? I've been asking that for almost an hour now, and some have said no, some have said yes. And, you know, I look. Not everyone should have a child. Let me make it very clear. I mean, there's no necessity for you to have a child. I mean, some should and some shouldn't. There are people who should not have children. It doesn't mean they're bad people. There are people who are too egocentric. There are people who are too narcissistic. In other words, too selfish to have a child. The child grows up crazy from a narcissistic parent who does not pay them attention or competes with them. I mean, we know them. Remember Mommy Dearest, for example, with Joan Crawford? I'm giving an extreme example. They're much worse than that, where the mother is in competition with the daughter or doesn't pay attention to the daughter or worse, beats the daughter, whatever. That should have had a child? So, I mean, we're not talking about the obvious who shouldn't have, like the welfare people who have them just for the money. We're talking about psychologically or people who are unfit to have a child. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying everyone should have a child for the sake of, the greater good of America. But it's an interesting question. And that's why I'm asking you, do you have children and why did you have them and are you glad you have them? Given the cost and the expense and the sacrifice, particularly right now with the economy going in the toilet. But you look back in the age of the grapes of wrath, for example, they had 5, 6, 7, 8 children. They wouldn't have thought of aborting a child in those days. They wouldn't have thought of not having children in those days. They spread, the food was shared, they got along, somehow they got through it. I'll never forget when I was young and I was just starting out, my aunt, God rest her soul, I loved her. She was so smart. She was one of the, down-to-earth, like spoken Russian realism. She spoke in black and white. Let me put it to you that way. Everything with her was blunt and straightforward. She could have been a good talk show host, but, they didn't have it in those days. So we were talking about children. So she said to me, you don't need more than two. She says, have two and raise them right. Just boom. That's it. That was the beginning and the end of the conversation. She said, raise two right. That's all you need. Meaning, how many should we have? 3, 5? Some have more. She's raised two right. And, go try to raise more than two children. It's not easy. Some do. I mean, I meet people who have more than two. I don't know how they do it. I was in the mall last week. I'm a mall hound. And it's like a town area, it's like the equivalent of a town center today, a mall. When you think about it, outdoor mall with a restaurant, coffee shop, this and that, is the town. Because who goes to a town really anymore? Where are their towns? So I see a whole spectrum of people go by. I see a young guy, nice-looking guy, four children. And he's a handsome guy. This guy could have been like, you know, a runaround, 100 children, women only wanted. Why does he have children, I ask myself. What motivated him? Or I read the other day, for example, there's an actor and a producer. Oh God, his name is escaping me now. He's a pretty good actor, too. He has three children with a woman. They've been living together for 8 years. They just got married. He was in the movie with he's in 100 different movies. He's the producer of that terrible series that I despise. I'm drawing blanks here. This is terrible. You're watching a man deteriorate before your ears. I can't remember. Entourage. He produces Entourage, which I can't stand. I can't stand any of the characters. They're the snottiest kind of guys. I can't stand that kind of guy. Creeps, Hollywood creeps, they disgust me. They're the antithesis of what the white male should be, those vermin on Entourage. Big deal. What do they stand for? Getting high and getting eld? You know, big deal. I don't like it anyway. So who's the producer? Come on, help me out here, guys. You should have – what? Still looking. Eight guys, they're searching. 18 ISDN sites, ISBN. Who is the guy I'm talking about? He was in the movie The Departed. Remember – Mark Wahlberg, thank you. That only took 4 minutes for me to remember. That's very nice. I think I'm wearing my pajamas over my tuxedo as well. Mark Wahlberg got married last week to his long-term girlfriend. They had three children together, and they got married. He did the right thing, finally. You have children, you get married. You got a child, you get married. That's it. That's all there is to it. End of the story. Don't ask yourself a question. You get married. That's it. Don't look to the stars for the answer. Look to what's right. But he did the right thing. So there's an example. Why he couldn't have gone out with 100 women a week? Why did he decide, for example, a guy like with everything in the world in terms of fame, good looks, money, why did he decide to stick with one woman, have children, and get married? Why? You ask yourself. Not everybody is motivated to run around and, you know, have sex every 5 minutes. Some are. Some aren't.
Savage.
So here we are, and we're talking about children. Why do you have children in a world like this? That's really the next question. Should you have children in a world like this? And I remind you, people had children during the plague, they had children during the Little Ice Age, they had children during the Irish potato famine, they had children. People, even in the death camps, believe it or not, there were cases of Jewish people having a child in a death camp. Why? Why would they have a child in a death camp? Hide the infant from the Nazis. Why would they have a child? What is this? What kind of madness is this to have a child when you have nothing to eat and you're being tortured to death? How is this possible? So what's the human desire for children? Where does it come from? Is it so inherent in the human race? Well, it seems to be, except in San Francisco and New York. It seems to be an inherent drive in people to get married and have children. And so the question is it worth it? And why? Or why not? So let's go to the calls on the Savage Nation. Let's start on the East Coast right now. New York, WOR, John. Children is the question. What's your comment, please?
Dr. Savage, it's not to be, you know, simplistic, but it's the joy. It's the happiness. It's the sharing with your child. I mean, my wife and I are married for 23 years. We have three children. My greatest regret in my life is that we did not have a fourth because I sat down with a piece of paper and a pencil and figured out that maybe I couldn't afford it. Maybe I should have been on welfare and I could have had nine of them.
Yeah, well, or an illegal alien. You see, the way to have more would have been for you to go over the border, grow a mustache, change your name, and then the ACLU would have been waiting for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that bothers me to the core all the time. And, you know, then you hear about this Octomom. I mean, that infuriates me.
Well, there you go. She should have children like my dog should have children. My dog should have children better than her. So your regret is that you didn't have a fourth. Thank you. So let me read Genesis, the good book. And God blessed them. Well, first you have to go back. And God says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion. Now, you know, this is interesting. Listen to how the Hebrew is written. in the translation. And God said, let us make man in our image. What do you mean by us? What do you mean us? Who was he talking to? Who was God referring to? And he said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. He didn't say, let me make man in my image, after my likeness. It says, let us make man in our image. Us. Who is us? After our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And of course, he foresaw San Francisco, where the creeper things would eventually take over. And in 27 of Genesis, it is written, and God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female boys and girls created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, here it comes, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and etc., and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that creepeth upon the earth. And so there it is. And God says, I have given you every herb-yielding seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, and so forth and so on. And it says, and to every beast of the earth, and every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, he said, you shall have dominion. He meant dominion over the creeps in Austin, Texas, San Francisco, the Upper West Side of New York. And God saw everything that he hath made, and behold, it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. And that's it. But the point here is that after our likeness, let them have dominion over them. And he said, and be fruitful and multiply is the point. So at a certain point, you're not supposed to even think about it. In other words, in my day, if a guy didn't get married and have a child, he was looked upon in a strange way. I don't happen to know one person amongst the guys that I grew up with who did not get married and have children. I don't say every marriage worked out. I didn't keep in touch with them. I don't know how it worked out. But it was a given. You met a girl by a certain age and you got married, or else your father, you know, whatever, your mother, something was wrong if you didn't get married and have children. That's the way it was. In other words, there was social pressure, which there should be. But now, no social pressure. So look what the children are. Take a look at them. No social pressure. Take a look at them. Take a look at what you have walking around the earth today. No social pressure. Oh, no, give him time. Give him time to grow up. He's 41 years old living with his mother. Give him time. You need social pressure. Everyone needs social pressure. That's what family is for, to cause social pressure on a child so the child is molded into a human being. A decent human being, a civil human being, instead of an animal walking around living for himself. An animal lives for itself. A human being lives for the family. That's the way we were raised. And what I just said to you, whether it's offensive to you or not, is the way 99% of the world thinks, particularly in traditional societies. They think the way I think. And I will tell you as I stand here right now, that people who are alien to me culturally, alien to me politically, agree with every word I just said about family. You don't even have to call to say it. I know it. I know when I strike a chord with people, because I know what people think, and I know how people think, and I know where you come from, how you think. Trust me on that. So what can we talk about? Are they worth it or not worth it? Well, it depends upon the child, I suppose. But why? And let's look at it from another point of view. Are children worth it? Let's take it another way. What do you think about women 60 having children? Zero. No good. Stop it. I don't go for that. I'll tell you another thing that disturbs me deeply. Fertility drugs. A great deal of the illness in our society, I know this is a very sensitive topic, a great deal of the illness in our society, children with sort of problems, and trust me, this is a very delicate topic for me because my brother, they didn't have fertility pills, and my brother was born sick, and he lived a horrible life in a home and all of that. I saw the suffering and the suffering in the family. So things happen to people for other reasons that you don't control. But when you start adding fertility medication to children, people who can't bear, you have to ask yourself from an ethical point of view, should everyone have a child? There may be a reason why a couple is infertile. Maybe reasons that you don't know. Maybe reasons you shouldn't know. Maybe reasons that should be left alone and that couple should adopt children. There are certainly enough children on the earth who do not have decent parents who would love to have loving parents. Why should you give them fertility drugs? Okay, moving on. I I take you back to another time in America. Let us say when John F. Kennedy was president, when a Democrat was more conservative than today's Republicans. You understand what I just said to you? Do you realize, and I've said this for over 10 years now, that by today's standards, the Republican Party has moved so far to the left and so lost its bearings that John F. Kennedy, by today's standards, would be a conservative compared to the Republicans of today. And, of course, the Democrats today are the communists or the neo-Marxists. They don't even understand where they are, nor do they care. They don't care where they are politically. They do not care at all. Neither do I at this point. They're sinking as fast as the 51st Ward can sink. The American people, it's sinking into the American people that Obama is basically a front man for the Daily Machine and that they're treating the White House as though it's the 51st Ward of Chicago. In other words, it's entered their mind already. So here we are. Now, I'm telling you, I'm taking you back in time. So I'm reading biographies. Hemingway is one of my heroes, et cetera, and so on. And I, you know, read The New Yorker. There were other magazines that were out that I was reading. I forget them, but I'm running so short of time I could scream. First of all, I have a migraine today from the weekend. That's to start with. I ate too much radicchio last night, which is so acidic, I'll never eat it again. Can they serve me lettuce? Why do I have to eat? Everything's a trick. When I grew up, there was vinegar. Now everything's a trick vinegar. $5,000 a bottle, like wine now. Why does everything have to be special? You ask for a cup of coffee, you got coffee in my day. Now it's 50 different varieties. The same garbage with different prices. Mochiata, macchiata, lacamata, lacawana, choo-choo. What do I have to eat radicchio for? I have a migraine from the acid. So I'm in a bad mood to begin with. I'm going to play for you a piece of the interview on the podcast of the author of the article, Party of One, Profile of Michael Savage by Mr. Senna. Right now from The New Yorker on The Savage Nation, fire
Michael
away.
Savage is one of the most popular conservative talk radio hosts in the country. His show, The Savage Nation, reaches more than 8 million listeners each week.
We so-called conservatives are actually the liberals of America. And the so-called liberals are the actual fascists of America.
Savage's disdain for the left is savage. One of his many books is called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. But listeners to his show get a lot more than politics, as Kalafasana tells us in his profile this week. Welcome back, Kay.
Thanks.
So the election of Barack Obama has put conservatives back in the opposition, and that has re-energized talk radio. Is that what got you interested in doing this piece? And why did you pick Michael Savage of all the conservative talk show hosts?
That's part of what got me interested in doing this piece. I'd heard him over the years and found myself listening to him a bunch last year during the election. And he was interesting partly because he seemed to be so off-message.
Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong you're on the wrong dial position.
Savage, despite being identified as a conservative talk show host, didn't really seem to like McCain that much.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely hated Obama. Didn't really like Bush.
So he was reacting really differently than the other conservative hosts.
Well, you know, most of the other conservative hosts, no matter what the problems they might have had with McCain, mm-hmm. were they certainly supported him.
Right.
And Savage really didn't. But Savage has always been a really kind of unusual, weird guy. His mm-hmm. radio show isn't like anyone else's radio show.
Right. So he talks a lot less about politics than a lot of other talk show hosts do.
Well, he's a lot less single-minded. He has this weird cluster of interests. He's mm-hmm. interested in herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. He's interested in animals. He loves food. He loves to tell stories about, you know, New York in the 50s and 60s. And he loves to talk about his life in a really unusual way.
This is The Savage Nation. Play some music.
As I walk along, I wonder what went wrong with our love, a love that was so strong. And as I still walk on, I think of the things we've done together while I young. I'm a walker.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
On my website, michaelsavage.com, there's an article by Matt Towery, which talks about the release of a true savage, that is the Lockerbie bomber, while the continuing banning of Michael Savage from the shores of the UK. Joining us now is Matt Towery to talk about his thoughts on this miscarriage of justice.
Well, Michael, I'm pleased to join you again as a guest on the Savage Nation.
Matt, give us a little background on your article. What made you write it?
As you know, several months ago, when I first learned that you had been banned from entry into Britain by the British government, I wrote in my nationally syndicated column for Creator Syndicate my personal outrage that you had been unfairly listed along with a motley collection of hate mongers and even murderers as an undesirable who should be denied entry into the UK. Now, at that time, I was motivated because of the fact that I had the honor, and I do consider it one, as a younger man, of earning a degree at England's Cambridge University. Now, my memories of the people of England and of my days there are so precious to me that I was shocked to discover that a man who is as learned as you are and with the intellectual curiosity that you have and the numerous advanced degrees from some of the world's top universities that you have gained, and the fact that you've never engaged in any sort of violent behavior or advocated any sort of serious harm to anyone ever, that you could somehow be viewed as an individual who could incite civil unrest were you to enter Great Britain. A ban of Michael Savage, well, I thought to myself that had to be a prank. Well, at the time, Michael, I felt certain that so many of my colleagues from the world of politics and journalism would rise up to your aid, regardless of their political affiliations, recognizing that they could be the next to be placed on some Star Chamber-type list, given little or no recourse by which to clear their good name. Well, that was back in May. And, Michael, as you know, we now in the summer, and we're entering the autumn, and there remains a deafening silence from many in the media, many of your fellow talk show hosts, conservative columnists, and politicians. And the time has come for these individuals to stand up and be counted because of new information that we've come to learn. But before I say that, and before I issue a challenge to all of these individuals, and in full recognition that my name is not a household name, I feel like I should explain why I feel I have standing to chide leaders in the various sectors of the media and government.
Well, why is that?
Michael, unlike most pundits, I actually served in office as a member of my state's House of Representatives. I was a nominee for the Republican Party for lieutenant governor in 1990, running with a gubernatorial nominee who now serves as a United States senator. Now, while serving in office, I was recognized as one of the nation's top Republican legislators. So unlike many pundits, I've served. I was an aide to a U.S. senator on Capitol Hill. I later served as a strategist for scores of congressional U.S. Senate, gubernatorial, congressional campaigns. And I guess my most important role was as chairman of Newt Gingrich's political operation prior to and during his term as Speaker of the House. And I've been blessed to have met or personally know every American president from Richard Nixon to George W. Bush. I've not met Barack Obama. But because of my belief in honoring our leaders and now being a nonpartisan pollster, should that occasion ever arise, I would certainly take advantage of it and enjoy it. Now, these days, I head up one of the better-known nonpartisan political opinion firms. It's called Insider Advantage, and I write my column where I let the chips fall where they may. Now, I say all of that to explain that I know many of the leaders of the various centers of power in America, the ones who should be outraged over your treatment and should demand a reversal of the decision made by now-departed British Home Secretary Jackie Smith in placing your name on this list in the first place. And while some have expressed their outrage over the situation, the effort has been far too tepid and muted. But now there has been a turn of events that should eliminate all barriers to political leaders and influential columnists refraining from saying or talking about the banning of Michael Savage in Great Britain and keeping it from being a front-page story or a front topic of discussion on radio and television. Recently, Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill allowed the man who was found guilty of the tragic bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 in 1988, killing over 200 souls near Lockerbie, Scotland, to be released from prison. Now, this Libyan spy, who reportedly is suffering from terminal cancer, was freed, according to McCaskill, for reasons of quote-unquote compassion. When I read this story, Michael, I was outraged. Apologists for the British government pretended that this could not involve the British government itself because Scotland's government acts independent of the edicts coming from number 10 Downing Street. But we very quickly learned that that was not the case after the released murderer was greeted by Muammar Gaddafi and a throng of well-wishers as he arrived in Tripoli. And apparently none other than Prime Minister Gordon Brown himself had written Gaddafi requesting that the freed terrorist receive no hero's welcome. Does that sound like an uncoordinated effort to you, Michael?
It sure doesn't.
It doesn't to me. So let's get down to the major points about this case and why it is that no one other than you and a few other good people seem to be willing to state the real facts. First of all, your name was placed on that list to provide some twisted sense of balance, given the fact that most on that list were Islamic. Unlike the others on the list, you had never threatened to harm anyone. You had never committed a crime. You had never been accused of something as vile as murder. In short, your name is on that list, and it stuck out like a sore thumb. Second, there is no doubt in my mind that to some degree, there was a coordination between officials, whether they be officials or pseudo-officials of our government, to place this decision into action. I believe that they were made aware of the fact that your name was going to be placed on this list and that they not only gave the green light but did so with a wink and a smile. Thirdly, we now have a situation in which speech, free speech in this nation, can be interpreted by other nations as actions of an act of hatred when it's merely a speech, a thought, something said on the radio, which, by the way, is regulated in this country by the FCC, which has the highest of standards. Now, this alone should be viewed as having a major chilling effect on free speech uttered in America in an era in which we all are told, like it or not, that we are a global community, forced to rely on global interaction in order to survive socially and economically. I would guess that this might include travel to many nations. Will the speech police begin to compile deeper lists? And will someone like myself, who holds an advanced degree from one of the world's top universities, which happened to be located in England, suddenly find myself persona non grata? I certainly hope not, given my rich ties and great love for that country. Fourth, you are being punished because of your philosophy, conservative but nonconformist conservative, and your style, self-admittedly, an often in-your-face, tell-it-like-it-is way of speaking to your audience. Now, as I mentioned in my article, over the years, it's been my privilege to appear on shows where the hosts have often had tough opinions, Chris Matthews, Bill O'Reilly, and Bill Maher, to name a few. Now, I particularly think of Bill when it comes to your being banned in Britain.
Why, Bill?
While I may adamantly disagree with much of what Bill Maher says, there are times when I do agree, and more importantly, would have written the same column and taken the same stand had it been Bill Maher, who I believe would admit is capable of making rather strong statements. Were he banned perhaps not from a nation that might be left of center, such as Great Britain, but rather banned from a nation that might be right of center that took offense to one of Bill's famed acid-tongued remarks? I would fight for him as well, not just because I was a guest on his show on ABC when it aired many times, nor because I like him as a person, but because an action like this would have the same chilling effect and would be equally unfair. Now, I understand that you're having to spend your own personal resources and rely on donations from supporters in an attempt to clear your good name in the courts. This should not be the case.
Exactly.
I urge those who make their living off of the words they write or the speech they utter to finally recognize the hypocritical and downright silly action that Ms. Smith took when placing you on this list. I mean, every single writer, talk show host, and author, be they liberal or conservative, should join in asking the British government to show the same quote-unquote compassion for Michael Savage, no Savage at all, I might note, that they have shown for the Lockerbie bomber, a truly vicious savage who was given clearance, freedom, and a hero's welcome. Now, for those of us who do not walk in lockstep with all the powers that be, for those of us who are willing to be independent in our thoughts and our statements, and I count myself in a small way like you in that manner, it is more often a lonely road. It's easy to wave the American flag on stage with thousands of fans cheering you on as a journalist or a talk show host or a politician or a celebrity. But it takes much more courage to defend that flag and what it stands for when the reward is not cheering fans or adoring crowds. In this case, the reward is clearing a man's good name and telling the world that they cannot take our precious freedom of speech and use it and twist it into a political weapon, particularly in this so-called, quote-unquote, global society that they've forced upon us.
Well, I'm fighting for the bigger picture.
Now know that you have millions who would urge the British government to swallow their pride and do, based on even what the polls in Great Britain say the people want, and that is to rescind this ban. Now, as an attorney who continues an affiliation with a large national law firm, and I realize I have too many jobs here, I continue to return to the concept of fundamental fairness and the utter lack of it and the capricious nature taken by Ms. Smith and the government of Great Britain. I will not stop in my effort to bring this to the attention of my readers, be they in newspapers or in highly read sites such as Town Hall or Newsmax. To me, this is not an issue of conservative or liberal, Michael. It's not Republican or Democrat. As an attorney, as I said, serving as of counsel with one of the nation's larger firms, I view this as an issue of not only fairness, but of defending freedom of speech in the United States and not allowing it to be used against American citizens in this so-called global economy and world that we live in. Now, I still love Great Britain and the British people, but as one might joke being a Cambridge graduate, this is an issue so simple even an Oxford graduate should understand it. Michael, we stand with you. We promise that we will continue to advocate for a clearing of your name, and we hope that others who have greater following and those who are on television and talk shows will finally join the rest of us in recognizing this injustice and ask that the British government do what is so simple and easy to do. Take your name off that list.
Matt Towery, thank you for standing up and for your support in this battle. I hope people go to michaelsavage.com and check out my new book, Banned in Britain.
Michael, it was a pleasure to be with you. It's a pleasure to stand with you, and I will continue to stand with you all the way through this.
Savage.
You want to live in an old age home when you get older? I don't know about that. That's like an old, just like an old thing to do. It's like old. It's like retro to go to a nursing home, a facility. Because your relatives don't want to deal with you, like you're smelly and you can't take care of yourself. And everyone's fanatic now. Like they want their hair has to be perfect, their teeth have to be flossed. Nobody wants anything imperfect around them. Like if a child's born with the wrong eye color, they're ready to let it go on the highway. I can't imagine what's going to happen to the old people in my lifetime. I just can't imagine it with the freaks that are running the show now and their tendencies towards euthanasia, the Democrats. My God. I mean, the only people who would stop that would be the Christian conservatives. But they're sort of like out of favor now, you know. So now we have the secular humanists who have no respect for human life, no belief in sovereignty of a nation, no belief in patriotism. What do they believe in? I haven't any idea what they believe in. The pleasure principle? It's a nation of ids? That's an old word. Remember id and ego and superego from college years ago? That all went out the window. But we're a nation of id-driven people. Ids, ids, ids. That's all. So I don't know if I want to talk about it. Food stinks in our old age homes anyway. That's another thing. That needs a real revision. Whoever comes up with an old age home with like a gourmet kitchen, wow. Imagine that with like a chef from Austria. You can make you like schnitzel and applesauce. Why don't they serve them drinks like alcohol, have a bar for the oldsters? Why must everything be like a prison camp in this country? Like you're old, now you have to eat like terrible food and die miserably. Put a bar in the nursing home. There's got to be some people who would like a drink now and again just to hang out. A little alcohol is good for you. Give them whatever they want at that age. They're like wild in those places. It's like, I told you, I don't want to get into it. It's a family show, but I've heard a lot of these stories. It's unbelievable. Houston, Texas. AJ, what's on your mind? Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Savage. Good old down home cooking. Savage, if I had to depend on my children, I'd rather just go on and die first. Our American society have turned our children into weak puppets. They're nothing.
Weak puppets. Weak puppets. Weak puppets. Weak puppets. All they want is pleasure.
All they And me being in a nursing home ain't going to work. I hope the good Lord take me fast.
You know, AJ, I haven't heard a man say that since my father died 30 years ago. He used to talk like that. He never wanted to be weak and being taken care of.
I don't want nobody wiping my neck. I don't want, and you know what I mean, I don't want nobody doing nothing. I just want to get out, because I depend on these children. I'm telling you, we in trouble. And I'm telling you what, if you really want to win this dang on war, I'm telling you, we got to get these bums out of there, the Democrats, the bums out of the Republicans, and the people, we going to have to take this damn country, I mean, this doggone country back. I'm sorry, sir. And I'm just sick and tired.
No, I know you worked up, because you could see they're all lying to us. They're lying through their teeth with Nancy Pelosi telling us she's going to have the most ethical Congress in history. I mean, I heard all of this before. You know it's BS.
Total BS. And they can take care of these problems, but they keep pussycatting around with these people. These people are going to put some on our butts. And if we don't stop as a people being naive, and I'm speaking of naive, I'm going to tell you why the Dems won, because the black folks, they went for the dang nothing. They didn't even vote. I seen a deal on the TV the weekend. They did a Hispanic deal, but where was the black man? Jesse Jackson's them, where were they at? Them guys.
I don't know. Well, I think that it was the same thing again, all Democrat, you know.
Come on, man. When is the black folk going to ever wake up and get their head out the sand like ostriches? They being left behind. And it ain't because ain't nothing out there for them. It's out there, man. I go to these schools and see these children with their pants off their butts.
Can you believe it? Can you believe these kids with the pants hanging down under their behinds? Can you believe that this country would let that happen? I wouldn't permit that in a school. I go in a store. I mean, white and black kids. You see them with the pants hanging down with no belt, size 90 pants. Where is the man to say you're not coming into school wearing idiot outfits, a jail outfit like that? Go home and dress like a man and don't come to school.
I catch my son with them pants off his butt. I'm embarrassing him in front of him. He never know when I'm coming. I told him I'll break his neck.
Well, you have to say it. I don't understand why a boy would want to dress up like a jailhouse sissy. I mean, look, let's lay it on the line, AJ. That whole thing of the pants falling down is a mark of submission that comes from the jailhouse culture. Am I right or wrong about that?
You're right, Savage, but that never do. We as parents have to let this happen. These parents that lost their freaking minds. And the church, I'm telling you what, when they took the Bible out of everything and all these churches didn't come together, every church, I don't care if you're bad, whatever, you should have came together and said no.
AG, you and I are old school. We're from another universe. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it.
All right, turn it. I'm not into this at all. I like other Sinatra songs. So a man walks into an Irish bar in San Francisco and says to the owner, "Hey, how you doing?" They talk. They haven't seen each other in years. And he looks at the owner on the way out of the Irish bar, and he says, "Well, my friend," he says, "we're getting older." As he hits the door, the Irish bar owner says, "You're only as old as the woman you squeeze." The man turns back to the bar owner and says, "That's the problem." And the whole bar breaks into laughter. Then there's a lawyer joke I read today that was pretty funny. Man calls up his lawyer, and he says, "Hello, can I speak to Mr. Shapiro?" The secretary says, "I'm sorry, but Mr. Shapiro died last week." 5 minutes later, the man calls up and says, "Hello, can I speak to Mr. Shapiro? He's my lawyer." She says, "I'm sorry, Mr. Shapiro died last week." 2 minutes later, he calls again. He says, "Can I speak to Mr. Shapiro? He's my lawyer." She says, "I told you he died last week. Why do you call me over and over again?" He says, "I just can't stop hearing it. I just love hearing it." That takes a little. Not all lawyers are bad. Mine are very good. Your lawyers are no good. It's the type of lawyer. I mean, it's the tort lawyers that have killed us. But even all, you see, here the thing, problem here is not all of them are bad. Some of them are good. I got to tell you something else. And I've said this, and I'm on record with this. You know, you think, oh, I'm against immigration. I don't like Hispanics. You're a liar. You got it all wrong. How many times have I said to you, that the Hispanic people who are coming in here legally are probably going to save the country. If you haven't heard that, then you're deaf and you're a demagogue. Who do you think I see on Sunday with their children and the daughter wearing a little dress? It's not Mr. White. Okay, I see it. I'm not blind. I see them going to church. What do you think, I'm stupid? I see what's going on. Who do you think is cooking my food in the kitchens? What do you think, I'm blind? Like last night, I had a pizza. I broke my non-dairy diet. It was a hot night. Went for a ride with the top down. I wasn't hungry because I overrated the Indian buffet. Remember I told you that? This is like a cereal, the show. You have to listen to it every day. I can't repeat myself. So I ate too much for lunch. It was too hot to eat dinner. It was already 9 o'clock. I go into a place out in Marin County because I go back and forth. Nice place, Il Fornaio. And I said, all right, I'll have a beer. So I have a beer, and it's a hot night. One of those nice Fellini-esque nights. Too hot for me, but they come once in a while. You enjoy them. You know, sitting outside, sitting inside. Then long and behold, I can't help but watch the food and smell it. I said, you know what I'm going to do tonight? I said, I've been off dairy now 6 months. I've had no pains in my feet or my hands. I'm going to have a pizza. Why? I'm a little self-destructive. And I lied to myself. I said, well, I'm going to test the food allergy thing. The way you test it is you first withdraw the food for a long time. When the symptoms abate, you add back the food that you think was causing it. It's an excuse to eat what you like. So I said, please make me a shrimp pizza. So the nicest Hispanic man in the world, I'm sitting at the bar. I didn't know he knew me. He's Mr. Savage. I'm going to make you the best pizza you ever had. And he did this with love. You would think the guy would hate me, right? Supposed to hate me because the liberals taught all Hispanics that I'm a bad guy. You know, people are not that stupid. And I got to tell you something else. The Hispanic people who fled communist dictatorships, as you see in South America, are actually anti-communist. And the more they come to understand that Obama is a communist and his minions are a communist, the ACLU are communists, and the left-wing white people who put hate in their ears, they're their enemies, and they know it. Don't think they're all stupid. At the end of the day, they're going to shock everybody. At the end of the day, they're going to turn out to be far more conservative than the liberals would like to believe. Look what's happening with the Prop 8 thing. The Hispanics went against it. The blacks went against it. How did that happen? What do you think? Everybody's easily manipulated? No, they're not as easily manipulated as you think. But anyway, told you jokes, told you about the halibut. Wow, what a piece of fish. I said to the owner, where do you get fish? But he made it with my mother made a sauce like that. Unbelievable. But it was sad. Whatever I do, you can see the world through a plate of food. I brought up my brother for that reason. Because if you're a mature man and you carry around your history, you know, it's interesting to me that modern psychology says don't carry any baggage. Why not? To them, conscience is a baggage. You hear? What they were saying to you, the whole pop psychology thing of the 60s was, drop your conscience so we can turn you into a pervert and a drug addict. Once you get rid of your conscience, meaning your mother and your father and your religion, and you're no longer uptight carrying around your baggage, your emotional baggage, why, we can manipulate you. Then you can vote for Ted Kennedy, Obama. We could turn you into a communist. We can make you into a pervert. We can make you into a drug-addicted fool because you don't have any baggage. Let us manipulate your wires. Let us control your wires. Let the street people from Oakland who have spent 10 years hating cops who are now in the White House, let them tell you what you should think about global warming. None of them know anything about the environment. While they were chasing cops, I was collecting plants in the rainforest. There is no global warming, none whatsoever. We're actually in a phase of global cooling. That doesn't stop the gangsters, though, from trying to gain more control over your life through the environment, the green cops, you see. So if you've been around a while and you have an education, you carry your conscience and your history with you. You carry your family's history. You carry your culture's history. You carry your nation's history with you. In other words, that's the baggage you carry, Johnson. You don't throw that overboard to let the modernist psychologist get control of your mind, put you on medication, and tell you you should have no conscience. So if you carry all those things with you, then you will see the world through a cup of coffee, so to speak. In other words, you could sit and reflect in a dark cup of coffee and see your own reflection in the coffee if you actually focus sharply enough, just as I did by looking at that plate of halibut. Cleveland, Ohio, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation.
It's an honor to be on the show, Michael. I was very touched the very first time I heard your story about my silent brother, your brother Jerome, and it's
Thank
always
you.
Touched me since. Yeah, and your mother cooking like that for him, I almost brought tears to my eyes.
Well, it almost brought – it didn't bring tears to my eyes, but it brought emotion to my heart, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing to remember those things in life, not to repress them and throw them away and say they make you weak. They make you what you are.
Or let them be drugged away from you, you know, with the pharmaceutical industry and all that.
Yeah, right. You're supposed to not remember these things. So, Jim, did you have someone in your family who was, let us say, in some way damaged?
No. Fortunately, my family's been blessed.
It is a blessing. And let me tell you something. People don't even realize it. The next time you look at a child who has two hands, two feet, two eyes, and no congenital diseases, you ought to get on your knees and you ought to thank God that you have everything the world could ever give you, because it's only going to get worse from here on in. I mean, you know what happens to people, what goes on now today with birth defects? It's a terrible thing. People live with these tragedies today.
Yes, a close family friend of our family friends, they have a son who's in, he's in his upper 30s now, and he's in the chair and everything. I think cerebral palsy and something else. And,
well, according to Obama's guy in the White House, whatever his name is, Chad, I don't even remember his name anymore, Rahm Emanuel, he has a brother, a doctor, Ezekiel Emanuel, of all things, who apparently wanted to monitor care, and apparently somebody in such a situation might have gotten no care because they were of no productive value to society, just as old soldiers were told to go to a death counselor and consider whether living in a wheelchair was worth living.
Yes.
It's in the Veterans Administration. They had to remove it because it was embarrassing to Chairman Obama. So what is a human life worth, Jim? These are the same people who would keep a mass murderer alive on death row for 35 years, but they would off somebody with cerebral palsy. How does that work, Jim? How come the people who would abort babies on demand will keep a mass murderer alive for 35 years? Someone's been found guilty 18 times. Why is that, Jim? Why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why? I have a sense of gallows humor. You got to have a sense of humor that deals with the tragicomic nature of life. That's all. If you're always looking for a laugh, you know where you're going to end up. Nothing wrong with being happy, but you know you're not going to have 100% like that. What else is in the news here? One thing I'm not going to talk about is my book Banned in Britain. I'm going to give away copies from now till the end of the show. Whoever gets on the show gets a free copy of Banned in Britain. I will go to press with it in about 2 weeks. We're still finalizing the last edits. I doubt very much whether the Labour, i.e. the communist government of Britain, will move to take my name off the list. It's a scandal in Ireland, by the way. The Republic of Ireland is not part of UK. Did you know that? I found that out in the Irish bar. I kind of knew it. The Republic of Ireland. I'm actually thinking of going to the Republic of Ireland. I may even buy property there. Because if Obama takes the thugs that he has in the White House, if these thugs become deputized, become the new police force, the essay that he talked about, play that soundbite. I want you to get that soundbite ready. You should have it every day. Because if you don't listen to this, you don't deserve to have freedom. You may as well just go put a ring in your nose. I want you to listen to who Obama really is. He gave himself away during the campaign. But
we cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
You didn't hear that? A civilian national security force that's just as strong as the military. And where will he recruit them from? The prisons? The way old Adolf did? Will he recruit them from the streets of Oakland? I mean, what are you people, nuts? You didn't know this. You didn't hear that, where this guy is coming from and who he really is? You don't see it with the people he surrounded himself with? Then you're blind, deaf, and dumb, and you don't deserve to have freedom.
Savage.
Man, I yesterday had a bad day. You ever had a bad day that wasn't that bad? So as I say, the bow thruster didn't work, blah, 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 so I get the boat back. And I had to have help on the dock, and it evolved into sort of an argument, and yelling and screaming. And then when I was trying to tie the boat down, I was so, upset, I jammed my hand into the wooden dock, tying it down, and got a splinter under my nail. I felt like I was in a, like a Chinese prison. Like they're trying to like torture me for information. Oh, man. A splinter under your fingernail is really bad. Bad news. So I did what I always do, which is have a vodka, continue the work, go home and fiddle with it with a needle, a hot needle. Remember my dad used to pull things. He always had like a thing with needles and pull. He was so clear-headed in an emergency. I mean little stuff. I don't mean an arm hanging off. This is fun. Now it's like, see, summer is a different show. More family, more, less frenetic paced. Less frenetic paced. I'm on the internet at the same time as everyone is in radio. You know, look at the stories and my website and this and that. In the beginning, we didn't have this. You used to have to go buy newspapers and a magazine and come in prepared. Now everyone's super prepared, hyper prepared. The issue is, what do you do with all the data and how do you sort it and what do you make it into? But I have 8 emails now from the family. We're all arguing about where to go to dinner tonight. It's one of those summer. Everybody was away somewhere. Now we're all here. And we're arguing over where to go. Chinese, no. Yes, you said shrimp was no good. Can't go. Yes, I said it was no good. But you're now saying, but I'll go anyway because I just want to be with the family. I'll have a beer. Don't worry about me. Poison yourself with the shrimp. See if I care. Kind of thing. Don't eat shrimp. Do eat shrimp. Get the duck. I don't want to eat duck. The other one says because they're nice animals. It's like a negotiation. We are so independent in my family. Everything is a negotiation. There's nothing easy. Nothing. Nothing is easy. Everything is a debate. See, this is the beauty and this is the danger of teaching children to be independent-minded and to think for themselves. Nothing can be decided easily. Everything is a debate and discussion, like a Talmudic argument inside the house over where to eat dinner. Well, you want to go to dinner, but if you want to go to dinner, why do you want to go to dinner at 6:30? Why don't you want to go to dinner at 6:45? For me, it would be better at 6:45, but on the other hand, 6:45, I could hit the traffic. But if you hit the traffic, then maybe the traffic will be debated. You know, let's go at 7. But if we go to 7, then we get there, and then what are we going to eat? What are you going to eat? Well, I can't eat the shrimp because shrimp, you said, were poison, be a hypocrite to eat it. You might die. So I can't eat the shrimp, so I eat the duck. Oh, but you can eat the duck because you like the animals. And this, again, it's like eating a dog. So. All right, so I'll have white rice, like an NVA in the woods of Vietnam. What do you want from me? I'll stay at home, and I'll make spaghetti again, like I did last night. And then today I had the leftovers with the egg, the best dish I ever made in my life. Oh, was that good. Where? You know who makes a very good product for spaghetti? Buitoni makes what they call fresh spaghetti. They don't advertise. They should. Another freebie that they should advertise. I don't know what it is with these Italian companies. They're probably owned by Carnation, but they make a fresh pasta in a package, and it only takes 3 minutes. I don't have the patience to wait 15 minutes for the noodle till it boils. I have a question about pasta, my own question. I don't cook as much as I used to. Italian women, don't they have good skin? Don't Italian women generally have faces hold up longer? Because when I was pouring off the boiling water last night, 2 nights ago, I inhaled the steam. First of all, my sinus is open. I don't think there's as much sinus problem in Italy because of the pasta water, number one. And the women have nice skin because of the steam bath they get once or twice a day from the pasta water. I'm convinced of it. You know? But that's neither here nor there. So I had the spaghetti. Now I reheat it 2 days later. The oil has to be very hot. I want to remind you, get the oil very hot before you put the noodles in, or the noodles will suck the oil in and you'll kill the dish. Hot oil. Noodles in and stir them immediately to spread the oil throughout the you're talking about noodles that are cooked from the night before now. Put plastic wrap over it. Don't leave the noodles in the refrigerator. Without it, they'll lose their flavor. You put them into the hot oil and stir them immediately with 2 wooden whatever, get it all over, blah, 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 and spread them out over a large frying pan so they're all exposed to the heat. And keep turning them till they get crispy. Break 2 eggs in them. Put some Parmesan cheese in it. You won't believe how good it is. Why am I telling you this? Because I love cooking. Once in a while. I just went back to my emails on where we're going to eat tonight. I said to the guy, should I? You won't believe this email thread. It's worth reading. This is Savage specific. I went to recently deleted emails because I delete them immediately. Here. I say, is anything on for later? I can always just have a soda. Because earlier today I said I don't want to eat. I can't eat till 3 hours after the show. My adrenaline's too high. So I basically killed a family dinner. Then I said, I want to see everyone. So I wrote, what are we doing tonight? Got back the first one, which says no plan. That started with that. Now let's see the next one. So we got the next one from one of the members of the family. Said, how about Chinese food in the avenues? Next one came back, said, I thought Chinese food is poisonous. Then I said, to be with family, I'll even go there. Then this came back. No, we won't eat there after that email you sent. Shrimp and seafood are dangerous. I'm pretty sure it's not organic. Okay, that was that one. See, that's what happens when they listen to me. Then the next one says, the dogs are with the dog watcher so we can go. They went back to the doctor for a post-checkup on the tooth work. So that was a dog thrown into the deal. How about Italian, local chain Italian restaurant? That's the next one says, too formal. I swear, this is unbelievable. I'm getting a migraine reading these. Then the next one says, it's local, it's easy, and it's not formal. That was the last one. Here's one more, then I'll go back to the hard news stories. Here's the latest one about dinner tonight. Yes, perfect. Ah, see? It's not so bad. It only took a number of emails. We went through Japanese, Chinese. We had rejected Japanese, Chinese, Basque. And we're down to a chain Italian restaurant. God, it's wonderful. The freedom we have in this country is amazing to me. Let's put that aside. Bahamas, Owen, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Just wanted to say that I listen to you all the time down here in the Bahamas. Been doing it for a few months, and I love to hear your commentary. I especially love the short stories you reflect on, and I just love to hear you, hear your courage and hear the passion that you discuss your issues. I don't agree with everything you say, but I do love listening to you, and I love to hear the viewpoints you express.
Well, that's very nice. That's the whole point of democracy, isn't it? Which is to disagree with someone but listen to them and then try to change their mind. Not to put them into a concentration camp or turn off the microphone.
Or ban you from Britain.
Or ban you from Britain. I know it's a sensitive topic calling from the Bahamas. Be very careful. Prince Charles may be listening in.
Well, we're an independent...
Prince Charles, are you an independent nation?
Yeah, from 73, and we got better...
Oh, you're no longer under the yoke of the Union Jack.
No, we're an independent country from 73, completely democratic, but we love... You need to come down here and eat some real fish. Eat some fish straight out of the ocean.
But am I banned from the Bahamas, or you think I'll be allowed in?
I think you can get in, man. We'll work it out. But
now, do you guys eat flying fish and grouper down there?
Oh, not flying fish. We eat grouper and red snappers and yellow fins and.
Oh, wow! You know, when I'm in South Florida, Owen, I love grouper. The Cubans make grouper so well. And when I was in the Barbados years ago, I ate flying fish. I felt a little bad for them because I figured any fish that grew wings should be left alone. You know what I mean?
We don't fool with a flying fish, but I mean the Nassau grouper, and when you talk about all the tuna and the big game fish, we have a lot of that here as well. I mean, there's some fishing grounds.
Isn't that amazing?
Savage.